Alaska Olympic athletes are already training for Sochi in 2014. In fact, the training really never ends. Simply being in shape takes a commitment, and now you multiply that to an Olympian level. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today, some of the Alaska athletes you'll be rooting for in Sochi have taken some time out from training to talk with you. Our toll-free number, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. What does it take to be an Olympian? The subject today on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
What does it take to be an Olympian? Money. And being in shape. And reflexes. And willpower. And money.
And money.
So, I've got Kiefer Christensen, USA men's alpine ski team.
Yep, thanks Kiefer. For having me.
Yeah, welcome to Talk of Alaska. And I've got Andrew Kirka, USA men's Paralympics alpine ski team.
Alpine ski team, that's right.
So, how do you do it? Let me. What's your disability and how do you deal with that?
Well, I broke my back when I was 13 years old in a four-wheeler accident. At the T10 through T12 level of my spine, and it caused partial paralysis through my legs. Before that, I was an avid athlete, avid wrestler, and then I just kind of shifted my eyesight. I mean, I was a national wrestler. I won my first nationals at age 13, and then I broke my back, and I shifted my sights. I wanted to do the Olympics. So I shifted it to skiing, and here I am.
Wow.
It's taken a couple of years.
So you use some kind of contrivance to get yourself on a mono ski, yes?
No, I just get in. I mean, it's a special rig. Anyone who skis or snowboards, they've probably seen them on the mountain. I have a neon green mono ski. I ski at Alyeska quite a bit. And
so you've been seeing people that go there have seen you.
Yes, they've probably seen me. I like to jump off of things. I do it a lot, every chance I get.
Cool. Well, glad to have you with us.
And thank you.
Also, we have a medalist. Either you guys got medals?
Oh,
nope. I have a couple of World Cup medals, but that's about it.
Yeah?
No big deal.
Rosie Fletcher has got a bronze in, what was it? It was a snowboarding event, right? 2006?
Feels so long ago.
Yeah. It was long ago.
It was. You're right.
Yeah.
Now I'm, full-time groupie.
It was a parallel. What
parallel
was it
giant slalom.
Yeah. So snowboarding hadn't really been in the Olympics very long when you competed, right?
No, Olympics made its debut, or excuse me, snowboarding made its Olympic debut in 1998, and so after 98, it was in Salt Lake City in 2002, and then Torino in 2006.
Mm-hmm. And that would seem to be one of those sports that would draw a lot of eyes. Did it catch on? I mean, they liked it, obviously, or keeping it going.
Certainly, and I think that was one of the concerns when it made its debut in 1998 was, oh, snowboarding is going to lose its soul, it's going to lose its edge. And really, you know, my philosophy was when you love something, it's contagious, and you would want to spread that type of love for something to everybody. And I think something loses its soul if you let it. And I don't think that it did. I think it brought a lot of exposure, and exposure is good.
Do you watch the X Games stuff?
You know, I don't tend to watch the X Games stuff.
I just wondered.
I'm not into carnage. I'm not into carnage.
I race X Games. Yeah. So I hurt a little bit.
I bet. Now I'm showing my age, probably.
Well, one thing you did in your retirement, maybe even a little before you really retired, was that you set up this foundation or this fund so that people could help support the Olympic athletes. It's such an odd situation, really, because it's supposed to be non-professional, and yet if you're an amateur, like the very that means you're not allowed to make money at it, and yet it's obviously, especially for the winter sports, even if you're in Alaska, you're going to need money. I mean, you want to get to snow right now.
Yeah. We, a group of us Olympians in 2002, we started the Alaska Winter Olympians Fund just for that reason. We felt like individually we weren't having very much success in raising money to pay for our expenses. So we thought maybe it would be power in numbers, that if we got together and kind of spread the Olympic ideals and created more awareness, that we would have more success. And I think there's a little bit of a misconception that, yeah, you're training for the Olympics and you're on the national team, so you must be receiving all kinds of funding. And that's not true. And I think that
that's not how it works.
That's not how it works. And I think Andrew and Kiefer could probably
well, it's partly how it works, isn't it?
They help fund getting us to places.
Okay.
So they'll get us there, and maybe they'll put us in a hotel, and they'll pay for all of that. But when it comes to equipment, and it comes to food and other things while we're there, we have to do that. So a lot of times the funding, and a lot of that's very expensive. Getting the new skis and the new bindings. I mean, pairs of skis are $1,000, $2,000.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's kind of a person by person case. Like, at least on the Alpine team, different guys are responsible for different stuff. Like me personally, like all my equipment's paid for, everything, but then I'm responsible for a lot of my own expenses. So, I mean, and different people are like maybe responsible for airfare or whatever. But no matter how you cut it, a lot of us have a lot of expenses.
How does it work with the equipment endorsement? I mean, obviously there's brands that would really like to, would like to get endorsed. How does that work, professional wise or amateur wise? Are you allowed to? How does it work?
Well, the U.S. team has a set of sponsors that help fund the team, like Delta and Visa and these
so
things
that
like
goes
this.
To the team.
That goes to the team. So I mean, I don't see. I mean, they help fund the team. The team does, you know, help fund me. So that's where they're helping out.
But like if it was a NASCAR, right? You could. These NASCAR guys are covered with every kind of sticker you could possibly imagine on every possible surface. You guys, I get the feeling there's some kind of restriction. You can't really do that.
We are allowed to have sponsorship, and we are allowed to have logos. They're regulated through a certain size, centimeters and diameters.
Yeah.
That's true. We're allowed to have them on our suits, but again, the U.S. team, they fund us, and they give us our suits and everything. If we ski with them, we can't put our own individual logos on there because we're racing for them. Does that make sense?
It's bizarre.
Yeah, I know. you'd think, but that's the way it works.
So you have to make a choice.
Yep. So it makes it tough. And but there are other situations, say having a website, we're allowed to put our sponsors up on the website. We're allowed to individually do events for our sponsors. We're allowed to do that as long as we leave the U.S. team out of it, if that makes sense.
Okay, so I assume that's one of the first things you want to do promoting yourself is you probably have your Andrew Kirk website.
I do.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah.
Yep.
Rosie, I don't believe
you.
Well,
I was just going to kind of elaborate on what Andrew was saying is I think it really depends on your sport. For snowboarding, they did not want any logos. Like, if you were to look at the U.S. ski team, Kiefer's jacket compared to a U.S. snowboard team, Rosie's jacket, we didn't have any logos because they felt like in snowboarding that that wouldn't draw the right type of attention. And so I think it's really a sport by sport basis. I mean, then, you know, you introduce cross country skiing and biathlete and hockey. I mean, all the winter sports, I'm sure it's just very different. I know Callan right now, Callan Chyth-Lixifsoff is struggling with finding funding for her season. You know, she's on the A team, she's recovering from a knee injury, and she just found out that she doesn't have any funding. So, I mean, the amount of pressure to deal with as an athlete going into an Olympic season and realizing that you need to start finding money to pay for your season. It's
so how would it work?
Challenging.
Can she come to your fund, or how would that work?
Our grant application opens on the 15th, and we announce the winners November 15th. And so, yes, yeah, certainly, she's been an applicant every year. And
then what, for your fund, how does that work? Like, do you get a corporate donations? Where does the money come from? Mm-hmm. Individual donations?
Certainly, it's been individual
donors.
You've
got a website. I know that.
Yeah, Facebook.
But you don't really have it's not like you're kind of in charge of it right now, but that's because you're the one that has the time. But it's also, it's all the Olympians.
Yeah,
really.
We're all a volunteer-based fund. We're through the Alaska Community Foundation, so that's one of the easiest way to be
Donation. So they can kind of take care of the tax paperwork.
Yeah,
and all that
we
sort
use
of
their
stuff.
Tax ID.
Yeah,
but actually, one of the big fundraisers we have coming up is we were chosen as one of the nonprofit recipients for the Mayor's Charity Ball, so all of the proceeds go to the Alaska Winter Olympians Fund.
Well,
so we're really excited.
That ain't peanuts.
No, they
pay to go to that thing.
So we're real excited about
Do athletes have to appear at the mayor's?
I plan on being there.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Be there?
There's, but the next day I leave for Austria, so it'll be fun.
It's a hard time of year because that's when everybody's leaving. I know Kiefer's going to be out of town.
Yeah, we're already using up a lot of time here, and I haven't even put out the phone number 1-800-478-8255 478-TALK. I know some people would really like to talk to Keegan Randall, but she's training today.
Oh, Keegan and Holly, they were so disappointed to miss you, Steve Heimel.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, boy. They were.
But they're on the glacier today, I would assume.
They are training really hard. I know that I think they're up to doing 3 sessions a day, so this morning one is quite important. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So anyway, they're not here, but Kiefer Christensen, Andrew Kirka, and Rosie Fletcher are, and our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. You can just call up and say hi. You can call up and say, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you. You can call up and ask a question, whatever you would like, from anywhere in Alaska. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. And did I mention a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422? And I think I want to go into training. We're talking about it a little bit before the show, but I am always amazed when I watch a competitive athlete work out, how hard they have to work. I'm amazed. Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me what are you going to have to do today, training wise, Kiefer? What do you have to do tomorrow?
So this is like I'm heading to Chile on Friday. So this last week was like a high week of intensity for me, and this week will be like not as high. But I still have 2 workouts to do today. Do like leg workout and then go running for an hour. So, when we're at our peak conditioning, we're spending pretty much all day long. Because even when you're not physically working out, you're stretching and doing something, and then you got to rest a little bit because you got to work out again. So,
well, what does you almost got to have a support team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
You know, along with being a member of a team, you got to, I mean, this is such a, where do you get your motivation? Is it just the feeling that I think I can do this? I have whatever the reflexes or the, whatever it takes, I really want to give this a shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's just being driven to want to be able to go ski fast, because, I mean, there's plenty of times in the morning where you don't feel like doing it, and it's like, feels like it's going to be the worst thing in the world, but you go out and you do it, and it feels good to go out and do something as best you can, and it's kind of addicting to, like, just stay at it and keep pushing yourself, and yeah.
Well, so what'll happen in Chile? Is the whole team going there?
A lot of the Alpine teams going there, the speed team and the giant slalom team, and so yeah, just training there, doing a lot of speed stuff, and then there'll be some time trial type things to see who goes to the first World Cup in Solden, Austria, in October.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you're on the speed team or the tech team?
I'm actually, yeah, so I'm on the tech team, but within the tech team, we're kind of divided into slalom and giant slalom, GS. And so I'm with the GS team. So the GS team is going with the speed team to Portia.
You've already lost me.
I'm sorry.
I don't know that. I mean, I just don't know the language.
Yeah, yeah.
there's four disciplines. There's downhill, which is pretty much straight down the hill. And then there's super G, where they mix in a few more gates and a few more turns. And there's GS, which is consistent turns. And then there's slalom, which I don't like because there's way too many turns.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So he's on the GS, you said?
Yeah,
he's on the GS team. So he's a technical skier.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that's speed mostly, but also you got to hit everything. You got to nail every damn one of those turns.
Good combination of speed and turn, yeah.
Uh-huh. So how long have you been at it?
Let's see. I started skiing when I was 2 years old, and started racing when I was six. So pretty much
at Alyeska.
Right down at Alyeska. Yeah.
Uh huh. Well, tell me how does it compare to other places? I've heard it's like too hard and too easy at the same time. I've heard that used for it.
I love it. I love coming home. People ask me how I travel all over. What's your favorite place? And I tell them, Alyeska. And it's like, there's a lot of, it's smaller than a lot of other resorts, but the terrain's really challenging. And there's a lot of nooks and crannies, and I love it. Yeah.
I think being an Alaska skier gives us an advantage.
Absolutely.
Because we have just at different portions of the mountain, on this single mountain that isn't very large, we have every different type of technicality we could ask for.
Really?
Yeah, there's powder, there's moguls, there's ice. We have it all, and you never know what you're going to hit next. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty steep compared to a lot of other mountains, and I think that gives us quite an advantage.
Yeah, but it's the weather is so squirrely there. Right? Sometimes in the winter it'll get all wet up there. Get these Chinooks come through, and
that's what gives us the advantage.
Really?
No. On race day, it's kind of a running joke on my team. It's like when we wake up and it's foggy, I got a huge smile on my face because everyone else from California and Colorado is bummed out about the weather, and I'm like, still a race to the bottom. It doesn't matter what the weather is like. So I like when it's foggy. Yeah,
this is like home. Woo!
Exactly.
Wow, interesting. Do you back that up, Rosie?
Yes. Definitely.
Well, what is it? What's the physics of it? Like for when it, what makes it fast? Let's start with that. Is it the ice? Ice makes it fast.
The skis?
Well, no. The slope and the weather conditions and all that. You know, you watch the Olympics and you see the like slalom track and it starts getting worn down. Like the later skiers, it gets a little mushy and squishy in there. It's a little harder for them. You hear when it's icy, you hear those skis just like, you know, it's a riveting, dramatic you sort of sound. And I'm just wondering, what's the physics that's going on in there? Is that, as I understand it, it actually turns to a liquid right along the surface.
It does. As soon as the ski touches the snow, it turns to a liquid. And so you want the different types of wax, or you want the different types of, let's just say wax. Mm-hmm. You want the different types of wax to actually shed the water. And what sheds the water the quickest is what will make you slide on the slow the fastest. I actually have a tech that does my skis. So I don't know all of the
I'll bet you do, yeah.
on it, but
but somebody does.
I know. I wake up in the morning and my skis are waiting at the top of the hill. I put them on and I go. That's what I know. Uh-huh. But I do know that actually when the ski hits the snow, it actually melts it on a very small level, and then what sheds the water the fastest is what makes us move. And it depends on the temperature of the snow and all sorts of different things, and that's what my tech knows.
Well, you know, so that's the Alpine. Now, that was good. You faked that really well.
Thank you. Well, I explained it in the very most simplest form I could find.
No, I heard
that. That's
sold me on it.
Literally all I know.
Well, telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. We're talking to Winter Olympians today. We got the Alpine ones with us, and the Nordic ones are out training today. It's important for them to train. But Rosie Fletcher, who holds a bronze in Olympic snowboarding, is with us, and you're going to have to speak up for our Nordic people here, being as how they're training. Why are Alaskans so good at this?
You know, I could give you.
I mean, it
like
used
the technical
to be.
Reason because we're like super hard workers, but I think that we also just embody that spirit of Alaska, and I think you tie that in with a little.
Well,
bit
I mean, like
type
you take
a.
Holly Brooks. Holly is surprising herself.
Yeah, I think that none of us know our own capacity for greatness, so that's why I think that we have. Everybody here working and training hard to see exactly what their potential is and to eventually compete like you do in your dreams. That was always my goal. You know, you're in the gym and you're doing like that last pull-up or, you know, the last ski for the Nordic girls and guys in the rain, blister, you know, snow, wind, and it's just that image in your mind of reaching greatness.
She put that very elegantly.
See, that's, I was going to say, I could tell you in the technical terms of like what makes greatness, but I think it's more heart.
I was going to say it's the Alaskan air, but
yeah.
You definitely
it
put
is.
It
no, but there
a
is.
Lot
there's
better.
A,
well, I think it might be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it might be. It might also, maybe the training conditions as it, mm-hmm. with the Alpine that you were talking about. Might have something mm-hmm. to do with it.
All the light in the summer, you can just keep on training.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I mean, it used to be that these, you know, these German and Swiss and Russian women would just like obliterate.
You know, well, I don't open any controversy here, but I think that USADA, which is the U.S. Anti-Doping Association, or WADA, the World Anti-Doping Association, I think that they've. Helped
made some
helped.
Inroads in this, huh?
Made some inroads in that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm glad you broached that because that people love to talk about that stuff, and I don't even know if it's. Well, I mean, you just look at the difference between, like, say, baseball and football, and the performance enhancing drugs, the policies of each, and the Olympics and their policies, and then bicycling and. How that all folded out, and there's this type of doping and that type of doping and this hormone and that hormone. And
oh yeah,
at this point, you know, the Olympics probably the most strict, but there's still got to be stuff. I mean, there's still got to be things that are illegal that you can do.
If you go to USADA, United States Anti-Doping Administration.com, you can see a whole list of not only United States but worldwide Olympians that have been caught for different substances. And we have to be very careful to even take cough medicine. And what we do, eye drops that we put in our eyes, it's pretty ridiculous. We have to be very, very conscious of what goes in and out of our bodies because of USADA. And they will actually test us completely randomly. At any point during the month, we'll get a call and we'll have 60 minutes to show up at a place and to be tested. And we actually have to update them at the beginning of every 3 months and let them know where we're going to be on these certain dates so that they can be there literally anywhere in the world to test us at any point.
I can't imagine that they can get more strict than they are now.
Yeah, you know, it's been frustrating a couple times, once or twice, yeah. But it's good in the long run. It's a great thing because I compete, you know, completely legal, and I wouldn't want anyone else to have beaten me by cheating. The reason we do what we do is because there's a certain pride, there's a sense of honor in what we do, and ever since we were young, we've always strived for greatness, and this is the way to be great. You know, I was told when I was young what made me want to do the Olympics, what made me want to do the Paralympics now, was when I was younger, and I remember I had a wrestling coach, and I was getting kind of cocky. I was doing really, really well in what I was doing, and he told me, well, you know what, you need to remember that there's always someone better. And that brought me to want to be the best. It's that simple, you know. You'd be the best at anything you do, right? So
yeah. Well, how is the competition field when you know when you start competing? Do you in the Paralympics? Do people get along?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We get along. I mean, when it comes to race day, we don't talk. We get along.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But is it sort of a teasy sort of?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it's teasy. And there's certain limits in any situation. I mean, with any competition, there's certain situations, certain people you do and you don't talk to. And there's drama. it's what we do. It's a sport. We're all extremely competitive. That's how we got at that level. None of us want to lose. All of us want to win.
Well, using my special powers of extrasensory perception, I was able to ask the question that our email participant here, David, wanted to ask, which was, is the sport clean? I've heard that a lot of racers in the World Cup circuit are doping, and while I know the U.S. team doesn't it hurt your ability to win and therefore raise funds? Thank you for the honest reply. I think we kind of covered that, but why don't you just go over it one more time?
Yeah.
Kiefer, I'm interested to hear what it's like on the U.S. ski team.
As these guys said, we're liable to get tested by USADA. I'm new. I haven't actually raced a World Cup. I've been training with the World Cup team this summer. And, people talk about it, like rumors, like, oh, this guy's doping, that guy might be doping. But they're kind of speculative. I hope it's not super prominent. It's hard to know because if anyone's doing it, they're not talking about it. I'd like to believe it's pretty clean sport.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it, in other words, there's still some cat and mouse, probably.
I mean, in order to be, the testing they do is so thorough that in order to be ahead of the testing curve, you need to have some pretty good resources, I think, because.
I'm just thinking when it gets to the point where, like, eye drops and this is very simple, basic things.
Yeah.
And I guess there's even like chronic medications that you're just not allowed to use.
Yeah.
Yes. They have actually at USADA, United States Anti-Doping Administration, their website, they have a whole list of everything that cannot be found. And it's like 70 pages long. It's ridiculous.
But yeah. I think they even have a limit on the amount of caffeine you can have in your system.
Yeah.
I mean, they test it.
And hormones and everything.
Wow. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. We're speaking with our Winter Olympians here. And when do you know, Kiefer, if you made the team or not?
They do team selections every year in the spring after the season ends in April.
So you knew this past spring that you'd
be
going to Sochi?
Oh, no. So, no, I mean, they won't announce who's going to Sochi tour right beforehand.
Uh-huh. That's what I was thinking.
So, no. For the Olympic team, no one will know who's going till the last second. You can have an idea. There's a fairly small group of guys, relatively speaking, of kind of who's in the runnings, but alpine skiing is such a sport that is left up to so much chance compared to, I mean, at least a lot of other Olympic sports, that it changes on race day who can win.
Yeah.
And that can change who can be fast right before.
So all you have to do is we just blow it once and it might oops.
Totally. Yeah.
there's certain races where it's pretty much weight will win it for you, and that gives me a disadvantage. I know.
Uh-huh. Really?
Yeah.
Because you're kind of little?
Yeah, because I don't weigh a lot. even though speed are my best events, it needs to be. I'm a medium weight racer, and
this is fascinating.
If it's a flatter course, or the course has areas where inertia will carry you, I'm out of the running. I mean, I'll be 4 seconds back and have a perfect race.
I don't think he prefers little, Steve.
I don't like little.
Oh, the right word.
Yeah, well.
Fine.
You know what I would like to also mention? Keegan Messing from Girdwood, the figure skater.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've got some athletes coming up in the ranks in a lot of different sports that we haven't seen. So I think it's going to be really exciting.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah, I mean, it's really mind-blowing. Well, we're speaking with our Olympians here as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
Well, you know, we have done sports shows here before, like, for instance, Iditarod, where the athletes are canine. But mostly not sports. But I do like, you know, people who hike, who trek, who explore, who adventure. And this is an exploration. This is an exploration in your own potential, in your own what you can do physically with your own body. And that's pretty profound. And so, you know, you talk about the Olympics as an amateur sport, but of course, it takes more dedication than a profession would. It has to, and your years of competing are limited, and here are people that are putting their bodies on the line. We've got Kiefer Christensen, USA men's alpine ski, Andrew Kirka, Paralympics alpine ski, Rosie Fletcher, bronze medalist snowboarding in the Olympics in 2006. And we're just kind of talking about the Olympics business. It's all going to be happening this winter in Sochi in Russia. And we get a chance to watch it on TV. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. And from Homer, Carl joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with our Olympians, Carl.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, when I was a youth, my aspirations were definitely to make the Olympic team. And I tried my best, but unfortunately, I had a high-speed injury, and I blew my knee out completely. And they called it total knee reconstruction. That was 30 years ago. And I recovered mostly with my own techniques for developing my health back. It took me a long process. But my love for sports and sports travel and developing this high level on the edge, as you were just mentioning, our team, our Olympic team, boy, the wealth of knowledge that goes into maintaining you guys is just phenomenal. And I would love to see some of that high-end therapy and surgery and treatment disseminated more to our medical culture. And I just want to wish you guys the best in Sochi, and hopefully your knees will stay intact. And I know your trainers and your conditioners must be a huge part of preventative maintenance and post-maintenance. How many Olympians have blown their knees out or high-end skiers? It's just a matter of time, it seems like. But if you could address some of the staying healthy before the Olympics and post-Olympics, you know, when your careers are no longer as competitive as they are when you're in the Olympics. Thanks a lot for the program. I love hearing these guys talk.
Thanks, Carl. Yeah, great call. Okay, Kiefer. You scared of blowing out your knee? Have you blown out your knee?
I haven't. Nope. I've been pretty lucky with. Yeah, knock on. I don't even believe in that anymore.
It's for Micah anyway. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I've had the only injuries that I've really had are I've had several concussions, which is that's frustrating for me because it's the only injury that I see. Well, not the only injury for sure, but some you can't do anything about it. It's hard to. You can do a little bit strengthening your neck and stuff, but yeah, we spend a lot of time. I mean, a lot of our time working out is to be stronger, to be faster at skiing, but a lot of it also is preventative strength type stuff. So we do a lot of like hamstring and glute exercises to help prevent blowing your knee out. And so yeah, we're really.
I guess in those at those speeds, anything could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, because you're going for speed.
Definitely, yeah. But, I mean, it definitely helps to have your little suit of armor on you. Because if you're fragile, you're not going to, and you crash, you're not going to hold up.
Yeah. So, Carl, I hope that helps a little bit. Rosie, maybe you want to talk a little bit about, you know, as you retire out, how do you take care of your own body?
Well, I actually did have a knee injury. MCL, chose not no operation, just did rehab, and I actually went to Dr. Vasilev here in town as opposed to going to Park City and doing the whole ski team thing. I just felt a lot more comfortable staying in Alaska. It was in the middle of the season, and my season was done. So, and it was great. Never had any problems with it again. Post-career, gosh, I thank myself for working so hard and training because, you know, having two children, I mean, being in shape and pain tolerance, you know, all those kinds of elements, knowing how my body works. I think that we have an amazing sense of body awareness. You know, in skiing and snowboarding, I know if you move your big toe, it can totally affect the way that your boot moves, which affects the way that your ski carves on the or snowboard carves on the snow. And so this amazing sense of body awareness was something that translated over into post-career.
I want to say a word about the medical part. I do think that sports medicine forwards the entire medical profession pretty profoundly. I mean, I know when I ripped out a muscle in my rotator, I went to first my regular doctor, and he sent me to a specialist, and the specialist says, "Oh, yeah, you ripped a muscle in there," and he said, "But I think you should also get a second opinion." The second opinion was a sports doctor.
Yep.
This guy knew so much more about how all that works in there, what can be done, what can't be done, and all. It's just like light years, absolute light years. Then my wife took a fall. She landed on her wrist. She busted the bone in there in her wrist, and they said, "Well, because the snowboarders are getting this injury all the time nowadays, here's what you do about mm-hmm. it." Mm-hmm. And they had this whole fancy splinting system and everything. They put this hunk of titanium, these staples and stuff, and it was amazing.
Well, yeah, the fact that you say that, I mean, we have specific physicians that travel with us to help us take care of our bodies and to keep us healthy. Every day after we're done skiing, we have certain exercises that they have us do. And in the off season, while we're up here in Alaska, we're given full sheets of certain exercises that we need to do to stay healthy and to actually get the optimum performance out of our bodies so that we don't get injured. I know with what I do, we do mostly shoulder exercises, and every year, people on my team break bones. It's just a piece of pushing yourself. You're pushing the limit. And
well, when you're on the monoski, I would think like the poles are absolutely critical.
Oh man, yeah, we blow out lots and lots of shoulders. Like they blow out knees, we blow out shoulders.
And there is, I guess, Kiefer, like, well, we had another caller who asked a question that we were just talking about, but I want to reiterate it. And his question was specifically, like, what do you do to keep yourself from being injured? And you kind of answered that. So, well, we work on all the muscles around the knee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. You called it wearing a suit of armor.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Penny, joins the program from Soldotna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Penny.
Well, thank you very much, Steve, and I really appreciate all these shows that you present and all these amazingly wonderful young athletes and that you bring on to the show. Thank you, Kiefer, Andrew, and Rosie, for what you do. And I really enjoyed listening to this, and I actually was going in a different direction, but my daughter had a person blow out her ACL when she was skiing, and they were trying to do a trick, and his snowboard went into her leg. So I totally get what you're saying about body awareness and working on all the muscles, and she had an amazing surgeon who also had a sports medicine background that saved her leg, and she's back skiing and hiking and unfortunately rappelling off the sides of mountains. But I'm okay with that too, because in Alaska we do hike and trek and explore and venture. But to bring it back to your amazing Olympians you have there, you mentioned things like the spirit of Alaska and hard work and teamwork and support. And I think what makes you as Olympians, and I've seen you, Rosie, many times at Alyeska and other places, and Keegan Randall, I knew her when she was a cross-country runner because I'm a former coach. And we produce amazing Alaskans and athletes because of your spirit and maybe because of what Alaska gives you. But I think more importantly, it's amazing what you give back. And I don't know if you have any idea what type of role models you are for young people who ski and hike and love this great land because of what it has to offer. But I applaud you for your hard work and your determination and your dedication. And I also applaud the people who support what you do, because I think it's important to have that support network, because as we develop and as we grow as people from a young age, because of that support system that is a basis of Alaska, I think we produce phenomenal athletes. So I hope that as you grow, and I know all of you do, you give back to all those young kids who look up to you and think, oh my goodness, I'm going to be that person. So if I can say anything, I would love to say best to you when you go to Sochi, and keep up the teamwork, and keep up coming on these programs and letting kids and people know what an incredible athlete you are and what you do. So kudos to all of you. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Penny.
Thank you, Penny. Thanks. Yeah, that means a lot.
Gorgeous.
I actually have something to add. You know, the Olympics, it's all just this whirlwind of a memory. But one of the strongest memories I have is, you know, standing on the podium and the flowers and the flags. And I remember looking out at the crowd and seeing my teammates and my family. And I thought to myself, gosh, you know, this podium certainly is not big enough. I mean, there's three people standing on it, but all of the people that supported these three people, there's not enough room, because there's, you know, the family, the coaches, the techs, and it's the community. And I thought to myself, gosh, if I could just bring, like, you know, Alaska, all of the support group that helped me reach my dream. It certainly having three people on the podium didn't reflect all of the people that it actually took to get there. So,
yeah,
agreed. And what Penny was saying, I think the future generations and coming up to the Olympics, I think that's really important. That's a very big deal. I know that's one of the things I like to strive for, is because a lot of them, you know, Olympics, it seems to be getting a lot like less views on TV, and people seem to be kind of flowing away from, you know, the honor and the dignity that is contained in the Olympics and in the Paralympics and being the best athlete in the world. And I think I personally would like to carry that dream on to future generations and to help show them what it takes to get there and to even help walk them through it. That'd be great. That's just what Penny was saying, and that touched me. That's good. I like that.
1-800-478-8255 to join the conversation with our Olympians. 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. One by email from Lee. And Kiefer, have you seen, been to Sochi, seen what it looks like there? Haven't seen it.
I have not, nope.
But yeah. Andrew has.
Yeah. I have, yes.
Tell me about it.
It's big. It's like Alaska. All of it, while we were there, they were still setting it up this last March. Mm. It wasn't, literally, it was half built.
They're building an Olympic city.
They are.
It wasn't done yet.
It's ridiculous.
They'll still be building it when you get there. You know that.
I'm sure they will. It was crazy. I figured they would have a lot more done than they did, but literally, they were working on the gondola as we were getting onto it. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I don't feel comfortable getting onto this gondola.
I would say find Soviet gondola, but no longer Soviet.
it was funny. And then we were on the plane when we got there, and a friend of mine, he needed his wheelchair in the back of the airplane, and the stewardess walks up and she goes, "Hello, why are you not getting up?" And he goes, "I need my wheelchair." They're getting it out of the plane. You could see them unloading it out of the side of the plane, like as that's happening. And she goes, "Oh, well, I will try, but this is Russia." So, and I was like, "What?" We just got to Sochi.
Well, we'll get back with more. This is Russia. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking ideas to improve the rural determination process. Only Alaska residents living in rural areas or communities are eligible to harvest fish and wildlife resources on federal public lands under federal subsistence regulations. The deadline to submit your ideas is November the 1st. For more information, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're working our way up to the Winter Olympics. I know you don't want to talk about winter, but still, this is something. This is athletes we've got in the studio with us, and your chance to talk with them at 1-800-478-8255. When we're talking about Russia, to complete Lee's question here, he throws a little political hot potato. He says, how do the athletes feel about the political landscape in Russia when it comes to athletes competing, particularly the law against homosexuality? Whoa.
I raced down the mountain. That, yeah.
I remember September 11th was right before the Salt Lake City Games.
Yeah.
And the whole world was in complete turmoil. And I felt like the Olympics was a breath of fresh air for the world at that time, because if you think about the Olympics, everybody coming together, despite politics, social, culture, and for the, you know, I think you were kind of addressing this earlier, Andrew, about for the love of sport. And I think that we need to focus on the athletes and them working hard and putting everything into achieving their Olympic goal. And that's why your
love of competition,
why you're training for the Olympics.
I like it. I agree. None of that is really focused on at all over there. And in that certain situation, that's homosexuality or any of that, it's not going to matter, because the countries are coming together to compete, and it's been there. Competition has been around since, oh, geez, especially the Olympics. What is it, like 680 BC or something ridiculous? I mean, it's not going to make a difference when it gets there. They don't mind. They don't they have no say so in any of that because it's, you know, it's a world competition. Oh,
okay, so I guess the answer is, hey, the whole idea is get the politics out of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it's about.
That's the answer.
Obviously, human rights issues are very serious, and I don't think that we're minimizing that at all. But I think from an athletic standpoint, we've all worked, or I did work hard, but these guys, all the athletes have worked really hard, and they want to go try their best.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was some talk of potentially boycott, you know, it sort of faded away. But I mean, that's going to be serious as a heart attack if you're a competitive athlete. And all of a sudden get sandbagged by politics like that.
And I think historically boycotts have not been successful, and we can use history as a good lesson for that.
Mm. Well, I did used to wrestle, and they were threatening to take wrestling out of the Olympics. I wasn't the biggest fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're putting it back now, so I hear they better. I don't know. Or I might.
You're still
ask
a wrestling
them,
fan?
Of course. Yeah. Yes, it's a very serious sport.
So how many years of competition do you have as a skier now?
As a skier, eight? Nine?
Eight? 9 years?
I've only been on the team 2 years, though.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I made it last year. I made the D team, and then I made the A team this year. So
you improved. Why? How did you do that?
Determination, I suppose.
Really?
I just put everything I had into it, and I worked really hard to get to where I was, and I just wasn't willing to give it up. I think when you work a lot harder to get to where you are, and it's not given to you, that you're willing to fight a lot harder for it, where a lot of the other countries... they're completely funded with what they do, and they're supported a lot more. But when they get there, I think it gives me an advantage. It gives them a disadvantage, and I know it when I see it. You can see it.
But you haven't competed in Olympics.
I haven't. No, this would be my first Paralympics. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be. It's bound to be different.
Yep. Yeah. No. It's going to be, and especially since being at the test event was pretty crazy. It was a new situation. That's for certain. There's a whole village that's just an athlete village, and food and travel and.
Do they in terms of money, as a Paralympian, how's the money compare?
How does
the money compare to the kind of money and the support that Kiefer is getting is compared to you?
You know, we'd honestly have to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I know
that's what I'm here for.
at one point, yeah, this is a talk show. That's cool. I know. At one point, the U.S. able-bodied team was actually together with the U.S. Paralympic team. We were a whole, and we got the same funding, but since then we've branched out into two completely separate sections because there were actually so many people on the team that funding was becoming very limited. So now we have two separate, we're two separate entities, but we still ski all the same races. We just do it a week after they're there.
Yeah.
So,
it's my impression that the Paralympics have kind of picked up in popularity. Whereas the Olympics as a whole has maybe tapered a little bit. Paralympics are actually kind of on an upward curve.
That is our goal.
Uh-huh.
That by the time that I retire, I want it to be big, televised, because people love to watch it. They're very, very curious about how that's working. Oh, is that a snow machine shock attached to a piece of metal that you're racing down the mountain on a single ski? Yes, that's exactly what's happening. And so...
That's exactly it, yeah. That really draws a picture.
Yeah, exactly. So I want it to get bigger. People love to watch that. And we do X Games. X Games is actually... They're starting to take it out of X Games. They took Cross out of X Games, the X Cross course, which I was a little upset about.
Mm.
But hopefully they're going to be bringing it back. I know Arctic Man up here in Alaska. Kiefer, have you competed?
No, I had a teammate do it, and that's a legendary race.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's fun. And actually, last year we just started up the very first monoskiing division. I started up the very first monoskiing division. We had five racers, three of which were previous U.S. team. The other two were popular big mountain monoskiers. And we got it started up, and we put on the very first race, and I'm hoping that it's going to get bigger this year, and hopefully we'll find some sort of television.
When's the next time you're going to see snow?
The next, October.
Okay.
October 1st through the 5th, I'll be in Austria, and then I go and I leave, and then I come back to Austria.
And the train. Team pays those expenses, but you have to somehow raise the money for, you could apply to the fund.
Yes.
But you have to, like, there's a lot of expenses beyond the travel, obviously.
Well, funding is determined on your world ranking.
Now we're getting down to it, aren't we?
Yes.
You could make the cut and still not make the cut funding-wise?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So, say...
What's that about?
Well, U.S.
Rosie, that sucks.
Well. Yeah, but you know what? I think it, like, we go back to it being different circumstances in each sport.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, okay.
You know, I know Callan is ranked second nationally.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't funding, so there's international rankings, national. I mean, it's convoluted. There's all different kinds of.
All right, we got time for one more question from Arturo in Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk Velocity, Arturo, with the Olympians. Hello, Arturo. Perhaps we have lost him. Now we can sit around and talk like Russians for the next 30 seconds.
No.
All right. Thanks a lot.
If I could, yeah.
Please.
I know that my son and my daughter are listening to the radio, so I wanted to say hi to Oscar and Olga.
All the shout-outs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So how big of a team, your team, the Paralympics monoski team? How many people are there on there?
We have 21 consistent travelers. And we have the second highest percentage in the world for... top 10 in the world, so that'd be for U.S. standings. Mm-hmm. Alpine A team. Japanese are the only ones that have us beat right now.
And Kiefer, how many people do you join down there in the Andes?
There'll be about 15 of us down there, 10 or 15 of us, I don't know.
And how many days do you get down there?
I leave on Friday.
All right, and yeah. Rosie, you have a website, right, for your fund?
Well, actually, we just do Facebook, Steve.
Uh-huh. The best way?
Alaska Winter Olympians Foundation on Facebook, or go through the Alaska Community Foundation website and enter Alaska Winter Olympians.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thanks,
for
Steve.
Come on by.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Talk Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Providence Imaging Center, with Doctors Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology. PROVImaging.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority has studied regional population, household, and employment statistics to forecast future traffic and revenue models for the Kinnick Arm Crossing. The authority is updating this data and commissioning an independent peer review of the work that's been completed so far. The results are expected in fall 2013. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.